Hello, compost lovers, and welcome to season 4 of The Composter. I'm so glad you're here, and I just want to say a huge thank you for sticking with me through the seasons. It means a lot to have this growing community along for the ride. This season is shaping up to be a great one. We've got 12 episodes lined up, releasing every other Wednesday through March. That's 12 composters you will get to hear from, learn their challenges, successes, and shared experiences. There's a ton to look forward to. On the personal side, some of you know I'm expanding operations. Our second Earth Care Farm compost site in Sterling, Connecticut is so close to being fully permitted. Just one more permit to go out of 7. And more fun news? We've got brand new composter podcast merch available over at the Earth Care Farm website if you want to show off your compost pride. Now, today's episode is a special one. We're talking with farmer Jesse Frost from No-Till Growers. Some of you may know that the composter actually started as part of the No-Till Growers family, and I was originally hired by them to host the show. Now that the podcast has reached fledgling stage, they've officially passed the torch, and the composter is all mine to run with. It's been a big learning curve, figuring out how to land sponsors, edit, upload episodes, all the behind-the-scenes work that Jesse and Jackson used to make look so easy. I'm super grateful to both of them for coaching me through the transition. Jesse is going to talk us through how the Composter podcast came to be, how it's grown, and what he's up to now. And of course, we'll dig into how he's using compost on his farm these days. If you haven't already, definitely check out the Growers Daily podcast hosted by Jesse. I love catching it on YouTube for great growing tips. And as always, if there's a compost topic you want to hear covered on the show, send it my way. I'd love to hear from you. All right, let's jump into the conversation with Jesse Frost. Today's show is brought to you by Green Mountain Technologies at compostingtechnology.com. Welcome to The Composter, a podcast for compost lovers. I'm your host and fellow composter, Jane Murner. Through real conversations with composters and industry professionals, we are digging deep into the science, technology, and art of compost production. Whether you're managing a large-scale site or just compost curious, this podcast is here to inform, inspire, and connect us all as part of a growing movement to enliven the world's soils. Green Mountain Technologies has been a leading composting technology firm since 1992. Our clients cover the spectrum of small farms, institutions, and resorts, along with the largest composting facilities in North America. From our Earthflow composter to ASP Technologies and compost turners, we offer solutions for every commercial composting opportunity. Visit compostingtechnology.com and mention the Composter podcast for a free consultation. Hey, listeners, we are looking for sponsors to help pay for the Composter podcast. Do you have a tool, app, or gear that composters should know about? This is a very targeted audience of composters and farmers around the world that want to know about what will make our compost businesses better. Advertise with us by emailing info@earthcarefarm.com. It's really good to see you. So welcome to the Composter podcast.
Well, it's great. It's great to be here. It's always great to see you. I look forward to our conversations like all the time. I wish we could do this every week. It's wonderful.
Me too. It's so easy to talk to you. So I want to give like our listeners just a background of how the Composter podcast got started. What inspired you and Jackson to launch it? Was there a specific moment or realization that made you feel like it was needed in the farming community? And also just wanted to preface that by saying I'm super honored that you guys found me and asked me to host it. So thank you for that.
Well, we are super honored that you agreed to host it. Let's see. If you really think back to that time, you're on your fourth season. So this would have been 4-ish, 5 years ago that we started kind of plotting it. And there was a lot of interest in sort of deep compost mulching and compost usage, but there was also like this growing concern about excessive nutrient applications, but also on the farmer side, persistent herbicides and all this stuff. And we saw that we were struggling to find good compost. And just, I think a lot of farmers were struggling with that. And we thought there are a handful of really amazing composters out there, and it would be great if they maybe had an opportunity to tune in and listen to composters talk, sort of like we were doing with the No-Till Market Garden podcast. Or Winter Growers, I think, was already going at that time. And yeah, just have an opportunity to have one really brilliant composter yourself kind of chat with other composters and kind of really dig into the business, and selfishly in hopes that we would kind of generate more interest in this business and more insight in how to make it work and how to start a composting operation. And it's a very complicated business. I know you're going through it on your new site, and there's so many hoops in one state that aren't necessarily in the state next door. I think for us, it just felt like there was a gap in this sort of scale, the sort of mid-scale composter, and that we needed more of them and wanted to learn ourselves just a little bit about what goes into that business.
Well, it's been an awesome hub for all the entire compost industry, like, is excited to have a place for all that knowledge. And so thank you for starting that. It's awesome.
You did the work. We were the annoying guys who were just like, hey, we have this idea, and you were game. And that was so cool. That was such a fun collaboration to get started.
Yeah, you handed it to me. Thank you for doing that. And then looking back at the last three seasons, how has No-Till Growers evolved, especially in terms of the podcast direction?
Yeah, so our No-Till Growers, basically, for the last how many ever years since we started adding on all these things. Like, we wanted to do the Composter podcast and the No-Till Market Garden podcast. We brought on three new hosts for that so that I could kind of focus on the video side and those sorts of things. But yeah, we do videos. We do the Winter Growers podcast, the Collaborative Farming podcast. We were doing all these podcasts. And the challenge for us was, as TikTok and those sorts of things started to really, really take off, you know, ad revenue just dove really considerably. So it was a lot harder for us to find the ad dollars to sort of cover those shows. We struggled to make it financially make sense. You know, Jackson left at the end of 24, beginning of 25. And what Michelle and I have kind of done is transitioned it to just, I'm just doing the Growers Daily now. And what we're trying to do is like stabilize No-Till Growers so we can kind of get back into supporting some more of these things. Because the other side of it is we switched to being a nonprofit, and we were like, great, we'll have access to grants. And now there's kind of no such thing. So, you know, that has also been a bit of a challenge for us to navigate. But essentially, our long-term goal is to kind of rebuild it in the same kind of vein, maybe even supporting people who are already kind of doing it, or encouraging people, giving them maybe some financial assistance in that way, to be able to do a lot of what we were doing before, but to do it from a more financially stable position. So it isn't feeling like we're underwater a lot and trying to figure out how to make ends meet and that sort of stuff. We wanted to do it from a more stable place, not just for the people that we're trying to help, but obviously for ourselves, just to make it reasonable. Because sometimes it was, it was bananas there for a little while. It's been such a journey, and we've learned so many things in that process that we feel like we're kind of inching back towards that. And that feels really exciting.
Right. And you generously handed those podcasts over to the hosts, which was like an incredible thing to do. And most of them are continuing on, right?
Yeah, most of them are continuing on. And we hope that as we get back on our feet and get everybody to kind of continue doing something, Clara has her Winter Growers she can do with as she wants. I know that Dan has just started a new season of The Seed Farmer, which is awesome. I love that show. I'm obsessed with Dan. I just love our host. You all are so brilliant. I'm honored to get to listen to you and to have taken any small part in getting it started.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Well, that's amazing. So it sounds like I get to collaborate with you for a long time, which excites me.
Oh, I hope so. I'm always here for you all. And I know that the whole team feels that way.
It's a very small team, for those of you who don't know. It's actually incredible what you and Jackson and Michelle have pulled off.
And Michael. Yeah.
Cool. So you've had a journey with compost making, and you've had lots of different methods over the years. What have you settled on right now? What's your compost making method? And do you also buy compost in addition to making your own?
Yeah. Okay. So let's talk about the method first. The method that I've kind of landed on, I guess I kind of have two, the ones that I lean most heavily on, just because they're the most convenient for me, just based on our vegetable scraps and that sort of stuff. So, you know, the first one is really just, I start getting a pile together. Oftentimes in the spring, I'm mowing the pathways a lot, so I'm getting a lot of fresh green material. So I'm mixing that with food scraps and often maybe some wood chips if I have them. And then I'm just doing a basic turn it a few times kind of compost, usually not including any manure. It's not intentionally veganic or anything like that. It just happens to go that direction. And so that's like probably the main one that I do. And I'll do maybe three of those piles a season. They don't create a ton of compost, definitely not enough to mulch with, but they make a really nice nutritional compost. And so that's my go-to. And the other one that I experiment a lot with is our neighbor brings us just boatloads of leaves in the fall. And I love leaves, but I don't quite, especially not in the fall, in like November, don't quite have like the green material to adequately get them to decompose very quickly. So I've been experimenting a lot more with just being patient with it and getting them very wet, getting what green material I can in there, burying some, you know, food scraps and that sort of stuff, mixing that in there, and then just leaving it in under a tarp and seeing if I can leave it for a year. Like going into November this year, I can have a pretty good size pile that I can utilize. So that's a very hands-off, not a lot of turning kind of method where it does get warm. So I feel good about weed seeds, diseases, those sorts of things, but it's not something I'm really actively flipping or anything, unlike the other pile, which I do have to turn a few times. Yeah. And do you want me to talk a little bit about the static aerated pile and my thoughts on that?
Yeah. First, like how many yards do you think you're making with your veg scrap, green manure? I call it green manure. I don't know what you call it there. And wood chip.
Yeah, green manures.
Yeah. Like 5 yards or like 20 yards, you know?
No, definitely not 20 because it's all by hand. So it's probably, I mean, it's closer to 5 than 20. In a big season, like if I'm really pushing it like we were a few years ago, it was probably closer to 10 or 15, especially once you add in the leaf mold sort of compost that I'm making. Once you add that in there, and depending on how many wood chips we can get in the spring, then it could be as many as 15, I would guess, on my own. And that's really just by hand. So it's a lot, you know. Pitchfork, yep.
Yeah. Cool.
So naturally, I do try and find ways to not have to turn it.
Totally. Yeah. And then talk to us about that static aerated system you had going on.
Yeah. So a few years ago, we built a static aerated system to just cut down on the turning. And we were, at the time, certified organic. We've dropped our certification, but that's only just because we don't really need it at the moment. We're not like doing the high production that we were doing. We're not selling at a farmer's market. We have the market set. We don't quite need it as much as we used to. So we built that static aerated system to sort of comply with the organic certification standards. And it was fine. And I don't really use it. I could see it being really helpful if I had a tractor, and we don't have a tractor. We do everything by hand. So if I had a tractor and I was really wanting to do bulk organic compliant compost, then absolutely that system makes it. It's a no-brainer to me just to get those materials through the NOP process to meet the standards and then get it off and then kind of do with it as I want after that. So once it hits those numbers, then I would be fine with just moving it off and having it cure under my own observation. And then I can start another pile. So in that way, if I'm on a slightly larger scale than what I'm at, it makes all the sense in the world, because then you could even sell that as organic compliant compost. As long as you're keeping your records, you could move through quite a bit of compost pretty fast if you can just get it up to those temperatures, hit those temperatures for a few days, and then measure your air and all that stuff, and then move it off, and then you could start another one pretty fast. So in that way, like, I like it. But for my scale, without a tractor, it's overkill. It's not necessary. And then especially once we took off that organic certification, it didn't really make sense because I didn't need to do it anymore. We're still technically like FSMA compliant, but even that we're under the production standards for that anyway. So it doesn't really matter at the moment.
That's awesome.
I feel like there was another part to that question. What was the, buying compost.
Yes. Good cut.
No, because I'm liable to just keep talking. So the buying compost side, we buy about every other year, we buy a pretty good pallet of this compost out of Western Kentucky from Charlie's. I don't know if you've ever heard of their product. I love this product. It's really, really wonderful. It's nice. It's well meshed out. Usually comes in like 50-pound bags or like a big tote. I think he's gone back and forth of which way he's selling it. I prefer the big tote just because I don't like wasting all those bags. I kind of think of it more like a fertilizing compost because I believe it is made primarily from chicken manure. I don't think it is excessively highly nitrogenous, but the crop response is really high in that way, and I try and limit how much I use. I usually mix some of my own compost in with it just to kind of flesh it out a little bit. But it's great. It's a really wonderful compost, and I appreciate that there's not only him in our state, but there's a couple more that are kind of working in that direction here in Kentucky that are trying to grow the composting world here, which is great. There's a guy down in Bowling Green. I think it's called Bowling Green Compost, maybe. And then there's a Bowling Green conference now, or a composting conference now, which is very exciting here in Kentucky. So I think that'll be in maybe October or something. And I should be there. Very small, but that's what it takes to get this stuff started in each of these little states.
Totally. Yeah, our Rhode Island Compost Conference has gotten pretty big. Big, like, I think there was 200 people this year, which is 10 times bigger than it was originally. So it's great.
Yeah. I mean, Rhode Island, that's like, proportionally, that seems like a lot of people.
It is. That's super exciting. I'll have to have Charlie on the show then.
Yeah. Yeah. Reach out to him. I have not spoken with him. Actually, maybe I did speak with him on the phone once, but they seem like a cool operation out there.
Green Mountain Technologies doesn't believe in one-size-fits-all solutions. We offer cutting-edge engineered composting solutions for large facilities and simple on-site solutions for farms, resorts, and institutions. Our consulting services include odor control solutions, operational planning, and permitting assistance, along with feedstock handling and recipe development. Visit compostingtechnology.com and mention the Composter podcast for a free consultation. This summer, I visited Vermont Natural Ag Products, the home of Moodoo Compost. One thing that really stood out was an innovative system from AgriLab Technologies that both speeds the compost process using aeration and captures thermal heat from the compost to warm the Moodoo bagging barn. Ingenious. I reached out to Brian at AgriLab Technologies afterwards, and I'm thrilled to share that they now generously sponsor this podcast. AgriLab Technologies provides solutions for efficient composting. Their team works with farmers, commercial, institutional, and municipal composters to save energy, labor, and space on your site. Their modular compost aeration equipment and technical support services improves process control, making better compost faster with less odor and impact. They can also capture renewable thermal energy from composting to heat nearby buildings, wash water, and for drying finished compost. Build your soil and burn less oil. Reach out to AgriLab Technologies today. Visit us at agrilabtech.com/podcast. All right. And then for the farmers out there that are making compost, like people like me, what do you wish that we understood from the grower's perspective?
Yeah, that's a good question. One of the biggest challenges is I think we need composts. And this is me speaking. I can't speak for every grower, right? Like for me, I kind of want to have sort of two different kinds of compost. I want the compost that's just like bulk, ready to go coverage, right? Mulchy compost. That could be a good product for you because it wouldn't take as long to produce. And it's a good product for us because we would trust that like a good composter is going to make that at a higher level or higher quality or with higher standards than your landscaping composter, giant, giant bulk composter who is just sending you whatever they have and it has a hay string and plastic cups and whatever, syringes and stuff in it. From horses. Like, it's a thing. Yeah. And not live ones. Like, you're not getting metal ones, but you're getting, like, the dewormer cans and all those things. We don't want that, right? Like, we want somebody who cares and understands that we want to avoid persistent herbicides and those sorts of things, especially with, like, a mulching level of compost. And then there's the other side of it is, one, a nice compost that we can just put down for some tomatoes and let them rock and roll. Because that, to me, is what I always consider to be the nutritional compost. And then I think there's room for those other things, too. I always talk about the four different types of compost, right? Like the mulching compost, the nutritional compost, which is the really well-balanced different mineralizations or different minerals added just to have a balanced product. But at the same time, there's those other two that maybe get a little less attention, which would be like the fertilizing composts and the inoculating compost. So I think of fertilizing composts not necessarily has to be compost. Like it could be dried chicken manure or something else that sort of fits in that vein. I know that out of Cornell, there was a woman there who's really brilliant, whose name is eluding me at this moment, but I met her at the composting conference here in Kentucky last year. But she was talking about how she does this dried chicken manure. That's kind of a product that sometimes farmers like us can use or will use. And then on the inoculating side is the, you know, vermicompost and those things that would be more specialty that we may use more as an extract than necessarily like as a ground application. Like most of us will not be able to afford to put, you know, a couple inches of that on our soil. It's just too expensive. And nor would you be able to sell it to us for a price that would make you enough money that would keep you in business. So that's how I look at it. Now, I can't say that's how every farmer looks at it. It just depends on their methods and what they're hoping to get out of their compost and their production. But for me, I think having some amount of division, even if it's not those terms, even if you're just like, this is what we would recommend for this particular compost, or we have this other compost that is bulk, it's not as sifted, we make sure to get all the plastic out, we make sure the ingredients are as good as they can be, it's more of a mulch, or we have this other one that is really highly sifted. It's cured. It's all the things that you want for a good, rich, nutritional compost. I think that's helpful on the production side.
But all of them are clean, without contamination, without plastic, without syringes. Wow, I've never heard
yes.
of that, actually. We don't have
oh,
the
really?
Horse.
Yeah.
Yeah, we don't have the horse industry here, so we don't get that part.
Oh, yeah. Kentucky is a different monster for that stuff, for sure.
Yeah. Okay, that's great. And just to round it out, this time of year is busy on the farm and for composting. And I am embarrassed about the amount of takeout pizza I end up getting. So I'm wanting to ask you, what's your favorite go-to easy farm meal these days?
Oh, man, we have to cook almost every meal here. We have a lot of pastas on hand. It's usually just like a starch and what vegetables are fresh. Right now, any of our pastas are getting fresh tomatoes, maybe some fresh sweet corn shucked in there. I love that. I always think about food as starch, a protein, and a vegetable, right? So whatever's in season, you know, the starch is often going to be anything from our fresh potatoes or our sweet potatoes, but it could be like pasta from the store. We could make our own. Always, I just start with that. Yeah, or rice. Rice is a really good one. We often start with that starch, and then we just build from there. Usually our meals take about 20 to 30 minutes. And Hannah's better about making a more interesting meal than I do. We both cook every day, and she bakes amazing sourdough bread that we have access to. So we get to use that too. We just start with the starch and then just kind of roll from there and look out in the garden and see what we got. And it's fun. I mean, that's just it's a very fun way to eat to me. I never really get tired of it. I'm always like, oh, pasta again. Great.
Yeah, I guess my go-to thing right now is like the sweet potato greens right now are really in.
Oh, yeah.
And so I love the sweet potato greens and coconut oil over rice, like jasmine rice or something. Super easy and, you know, like nutritious, but I probably could use more. We have a lot of great fish around Rhode Island too. So piece of fish with that, amazing. But yeah,
that sounds amazing.
There's a lot of times I'm like, oh, shoot, it's like 7 p.m. and I haven't eaten. Like, what do I got? I got to put something in my mouth. I should plan the food better.
Yeah, that's the challenge, too, is you get done with a day and you're tired and you're like, oh, wait, I'm hungry. Now what? And then you have to find something to eat. Yeah. Yeah. No, the sweet potato greens, that's a good one. I love sweet potato greens. I was just looking at those the other day. We haven't eaten any yet this year, but we eat them every year. And just ate our first watermelons, which is love watermelons. I like kind of hoard them. Like I want to freeze all the juice just because I want it all winter. I think we've talked about this before. I like get obsessed with watermelon juice. But anyway, yeah, whatever is in season, I'm all for it.
Cool. All right. It's been super hot here. I know you were saying it's been super hot in Kentucky too, but my tomatoes are slow this year. Like I've got sun gold cherries and just starting to get the green zebras, but none of my big Paul Robesons or Brandywines are ready yet. I don't know if that's happening where you are.
Are you losing blossoms? Like, have you been over 85, 90 degrees for extended periods?
We have been, but I have a ton of green tomatoes.
Okay. They're just not quite ripening. Has it been dry?
Yeah, it's been pretty dry. Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes that can do it a little bit. I don't know. Yeah. Sometimes it's just...
I don't get it. Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes if you went in, did you have a cool spring?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Super cool.
Yeah. We had a very wet. Very, very wet spring. Pretty cool. And then just a blazing hot summer. So yeah, our tomatoes have been behind too. I got some of mine started late too. So that played into it. But
we had our first spring nor'easter. It was like in May. Normally that's like a winter thing.
So how does that affect like the compost business when you get a wild storm like that in the middle of production season, really, right?
It doesn't affect the compost at all. Like we lost a couple days of sales because it was like bad weather, but the compost is fine. It's more the farmers that like it set like peppers, tomatoes, eggplants, set them back a little bit. So yeah, well, the compost is resilient when it comes to weather stuff.
So like even taking in that much rain, I'm assuming it was loaded. You got a lot of rain during that nor'easter.
We did, but it wasn't like the rain you've been getting. It's not like these 9-inch storms or anything like that. I think we might have got maybe an inch and a half in it, you know, a day. Yeah, it wasn't bad. Just windy, super windy and, you know, trees down and that kind of thing. Actually, it's good for compost. We end up with more wood chips and leaves.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's part of it, right? And there is a weird thing about, maybe you and I've talked about this before, but there is like this element of almost both farming and composting. It's been removed from the waste recycling business, right? I always have trouble articulating this, but it belongs in a way in the waste recycling infrastructure, you have all these organic waste, like all these trees have fallen down. We can utilize that and grow more food out of them. But sometimes I think it often gets diverted. It's like there's farming and then waste management stuff is totally separate. It gets like trash and plastic bottles and all these things. But it really, there is all this organic matter that ends up going that direction. You do a great job of bringing in the wood chips and all these things. I think it's a huge missed opportunity to not have more composters encouraged to be in the waste management business in that way of like managing our wasted organic materials, food and et cetera.
It's a really interesting hat to wear because I don't feel like a waste manager. I feel like a farmer. But yeah, it is my role. I am taking in a lot of waste, especially like the food scraps come in. But keeping the mindset that waste handling is not my end of the day intention. I'm making a product. And that has been like a big distinction for me of what we will and won't take in. If I'm thinking everything that's coming in here is a resource, not waste. And so then these are my resources, my materials to make a good compost. I think that's the mindset I'd like the industry to take on, even though, sure, we're solving a problem of waste stuff. But if you think of it all as different waste ingredients going in, it dilutes what you're making in some way. Like these are awesome things, like all these wood chips, that's an amazing resource, not waste.
Right. In a way, you're like keeping it from being waste. Like that is the job, like keeping it from being wasted.
And it's really important to me, the verbiage that we use, like instead of food waste, I want to say food scraps. I don't want to say yard waste, which everyone calls it. It's yard materials. And I just keep repeating those things. And it's starting to shift a little bit, I feel like. But man, it's a tough line to be. And I'm getting a solid waste permit there. That's my permit application. So I'm in a confusing gray area of what we are.
No, that's interesting. I hadn't thought of it from that angle necessarily. When you put that connotation on it, you kind of carry the weight of what waste means as a composter. But at the same time, I think there's a pride to be taken in knowing that by you existing and doing your work, you're keeping it from being waste and from being wasted. And so by looking at it that way, that's kind of what you're doing. I love that.
Yeah, it's a beautiful thing. It's just like more clear for the public. They're separating at the cafeteria and it says food scraps. That to me is so much more clear than food waste. Cause then it's like, you think you put your straw in there or whatever. I don't know. Yeah. It's a, we have still a lot to talk about in the society about what we're doing with our waste.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's great. I like that. I like thinking about it from the standpoint of the public, like how would they react to the word waste versus the word scraps? Yeah.
It's little, but big.
Absolutely.
Cool. Well, I know you're extremely busy and I don't want to take up too much time. It's always a pleasure to talk to you, Jesse. Is there anything else you want to add or anything that we need to discuss today?
I don't know. You and I can talk for hours on all of these things. I'm very excited and heartened just by what I've seen in the last few years in terms of, you know, composting. And I think the work that you do is so amazing. And I'm just, I've loved listening to all of the podcasts. I can't wait for the new season. And I learned so much, even as a grower, from composters, just seeing it from their side. Because with seeds, they show up and I put them in the ground. I do my thing with them. But there is this whole process before they get here. And there is this whole process with composting that is a business that has to make money and has to figure out how to meet my needs and meet their needs. And no, but I just really appreciate what you do and what you and all the composters do. I think there is a lot of appreciation, a growing appreciation, certainly from the farmer side.
Cool. Yeah, we're back at you with the farming community. Yeah, it's such a collaborative effort between us. So it's really great. Well, thank you so much. Pleasure to have you on.
Thank you so much for having me, Jane. It's always a pleasure.
Yeah, you too. Gravity rings around Saturn. Thanks so much for listening, compost lovers. I hope you enjoyed this conversation with Jesse Frost. It feels really special to come full circle and reflect on how this podcast started with no-till growers and the vision Jesse and Jackson had to inspire more people to make high-quality compost. The amazing thing is, it's working. I hear from listeners all the time who've been inspired to start their own compost operations after tuning in. That means the world to me. It's truly an honor to be part of this movement. Big thanks to Galen Brown for being a thoughtful partner in shaping ideas for the show. and to Michael Sellis for editing these episodes and making them sound great. And Yasna Brown for behind-the-scenes support. Don't forget, this season is packed with amazing guests, including experienced composters from across the U.S. and beyond. Plus, I'll be sharing more updates from my second compost site in Sterling, Connecticut, which is almost through the permitting process. And if you want to show off your compost pride, check out the new Composter podcast merch now available on the EarthCare Farm website. Follow us on Instagram at the Composter Podcast. Love you, composters.